You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm William Hosea. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, May 11, 2017.
I thought of myself as not a liberal, never an anti-liberal, but not a liberal. That started changing actually after 9/11.
Political science professor Jeffrey Isaac discusses politics and jazz on this week's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glab. That's coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks about what Bloomington residents like best about the city. But first, these local headlines.
Plans for an apartment complex on West Tap Road are inching forward after the City Council gave its support last night in a straw poll. The City Council approved a request from Regency Consolidated LLC to amend the existing Woolery Mill planned unit development to allow for multifamily dwellings on an 8-acre parcel at 2182 West Tap Road. The vote came after much discussion on an affordable housing component and whether adding residential development meant the loss of future commercial development in the area. Regency is proposing a family-oriented residential complex comprised of 111 units. Regency CEO Jim McKinney said the new development will be similar to Regency's adjacent property, Adams Village, but with family-oriented amenities.
The purpose behind this project, we recognize a need for housing for families in the southwestern quadrant of our city here. This is going to be off of Tap Road, which gives access to Crane. Within the rest of our Adams Village, we have numerous families that live there. But if you look at the site plan here, and I agree with Eric, when we looked at this, it looks like barracks up there. And we recognized that we wanted to keep open green areas. We wanted to have areas with playgrounds, the pools, an environment that creates a family wholesome atmosphere.
McKinney said his firm is committed to making 10% of the units or 11 apartments into affordable housing units. Council member Isabel Piedmont Smith asked McKinney for details about the commitment.
It does not say in the petitioner's statement, and I don't think we specified it at the Plan Commission, how that affordability would be measured. And so maybe this is something for staff.
You have a great question there. Kyle Lepore and I met with Doris Sims, and we went through the process of how we would be benchmarked each year. They would provide us what the rental rates could be for each style of apartment. And then we would have to get an application from a tenant coming in, and that they would have to be qualified under those GOO rules and guidelines. Our books would be open for audit. They'd be able to come and look at it periodically. We'd have to submit a report. We do have to recognize that the ordinance with regards to workforce housing, which Mike Carman was discussing, hasn't been solidified, and so Doris isn't completely sure in what manner this will be monitored and benchmarks to make sure that we're qualifying, but we understand that's going to be a necessity and we will comply with that.
The rent for the affordable housing is to be set by the city. Piedmont Smith asked Planning Director Terry Porter for specifics on how rent will be calculated.
I would like to have it defined what is going to determine the eligibility of people getting into these apartments and the rent level of these apartments.
The rent level is what's calculated as the living wage in Bloomington. And that figure for this year has been determined to be $12.44 an hour, which figures on an annual basis $25,875 for income, for annual income for one person to qualify as workforce housing.
So that would be
a living wage. So the housing, the rent calculation is 30% of that amount, which is, it comes out to be about $647 a month.
Councilmember Allison Chopra and Steve Voland pressed McKinney to estimate what he anticipates the typical rents will be in the new development.
Know what you're going to charge for rent in one or two bedrooms in this complex? You haven't done any kind of gaming out based on what you, I assume you all know what your expenses are.
We understand what our expenses are with the operation with regards to determining final rents. It's a very much dependent upon interest rates at the time. This project would not come on for another probably 24 months. It's cost of interest, cost of construction costs at that time, what the market is as of that time, competition. It's a valid concern or question to be asking, what rents do you have envisioned for this? But also, we have to say, I wouldn't want to commit today to what they may be in the future.
Asking whether you know what your rents are is different than asking you to commit to rents. I'm not asking that at all. We've already established that the workforce housing would have to meet the formula
yes.
that you've been presented. So all I'm asking is ballpark.
You know, I would say
805 for a one-bedroom in Adams Village, how much more roughly?
I would say there would be a premium for the new project of about $200 to $250 a month.
So you're thinking that a typical one-bedroom here would be $1,050.
Yeah. Piedmont Smith requested that Regency's contract with the city specify that they will adhere to the rent calculations and eligibility requirements set by the city. During the straw poll, Councilmember Andy Ruff expressed concern about the city's efforts to develop affordable housing standards.
It may take more time than we would have originally thought, because the administration is going to be extremely careful in not developing something that the General Assembly is not just going to overturn, nullify, and just make void after we've been. And so it may take a while. It's going to be a creative way to do it, come up with a policy and some procedures that can't just be wiped away.
During public comment, area property owner Randy Cassidy and Eric Stolberg, CEO of WS Property Group, were among several businessmen voicing support for the apartment complex. Both supported the idea that adding residential rooftops would draw more commercial development to the area. In the 513 straw poll, Councilmember Voland voted no, while Piedmont Smith, Sturbaum, and Councilmember Dorothy Granger passed. A more fully designed site plan will have to gain approval from the Planning Commission for the residential complex to continue to move forward.
Ellettsville Town Marshal Jimmy D. Durnell says town residents will see three new police vehicles on the road by July.
Two are scheduled in late May, in the fourth week of May, and the third one is scheduled in the first week of June. We're targeting first week of July, having them all in service.
The council approved the lease purchase of the new vehicles for approximately $33,000 each back in March. Durnell said he may need to buy two more vehicles in 2018 because the police department's older Dodge Chargers are proving expensive to maintain.
Another Marsh supermarket's location is facing possible closure after an announcement by the company this week. The supermarket chain had already announced it might close its location at 1825 North Kensar Pike. That closure could result in the termination of 83 employees, 55 of whom are full-time. Now, Marsh says it is offering all 44 remaining locations for sale, opening the possibility that the store on Bloomington's east side could also be closed if a buyer is not found. The news comes as landscapers, plumbers, and other contractors say Marsh owes them more than $150,000 for work they have completed recently. The Indy Star reported today that some contractors have stopped working for the company because of unpaid bills.
Local students have received honors recently for their work in music and television. Bloomington High School North Symphonic Band was named runner-up in the Indiana State School Music Association State Concert Finals. The band is planning a spring concert on May 17th at 7 p.m. in the Bloomington North Auditorium to celebrate. Bachelor Middle School's BTV film crew swept four categories in the 18th annual Windsong National Student Film Festival this April. Students won first place awards in drama, documentary, comedy, and newscast. This marks the fifth time BTV competed in the festival, which includes schools from Indiana, Ohio, and California. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm William Hosea. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithfield Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithsville Home Automation Service is available at smithsvillesecurity.com.
Jeff Isaac is an opinionated scholar, a professor of political science at Indiana University. He has written many books, is a regular contributor to respected journals, and takes to social media to share his feelings and bring political science just a bit closer to the average person. He grew up in a typical New York City neighborhood, playing stickball and hanging out on the street corner. Watergate drew the teenager into the world of politics and theory. He's found a home in Bloomington, where he also plays piano for the Postmodern Jazz Quartet. He joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here, my guest in the studio today, Jeffrey C. Isaac. He's a professor at the Indiana University Department of Political Science. Thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thanks for having me, Big Mike.
Jeff Isaac is a guy who has a presence on social media.
That is true.
Are you ready?
Have you hacked into my emails?
I'm going to quote from you.
Quote from me.
Donald Trump is a...
He is a...
You're a professor of political science at a state university. How can you be speaking like this?
Because I want to. Because I exercise the freedom that I possess in this country. Actually, it raises some serious issues. There are some academics who have gotten in a lot of trouble at their universities for tweeting or making statements on social media that are very provocative, perhaps incendiary, but they share in common the fact that they're using not only a non-scholarly way of talking, but kind of emoting, expressing strong opinions in a way that is very different than the way I express myself when I'm publishing, mm-hmm. writing essays for journals, even on Facebook. But on Facebook, there's a whole other thing that's going on. People are posting stuff about what they ate, the music that they like, how they feel today, cursing at a neighbor for making noise, mm-hmm. or saying that Donald Trump is a which I'm often moved to say.
Another professor might be worried, might get jittery about speaking like that and would refrain from speaking like that. Would that happen here at Indiana University?
I could say that that's never, ever stopped me from saying anything. And certainly now it wouldn't stop me because no one can harm my career.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a tenured full professor. I do my job. There are bad things that a person could do that could jeopardize their career. I don't think saying Donald Trump is a prick on Facebook is one of them.
Jeff Isaac, he has written for The Nation, Dissent Magazine, The American Prospect, a number of books he's put out, topics including the meaning of the Eastern European revolutions of 1989, Hannah Arendt, Albert Camus.
Yes.
You've written books on political theory and power. You've edited an edition of the Communist Manifesto. On Big Talk, we like to get to first questions a lot.
Yeah.
Among the topics that you've written about are power.
That's right.
Now, what does that term mean, power, when we use it in the political science sense?
I published a book on power in 1987. The book that I published, based on my dissertation, was about some very intense debates that political scientists and political theorists, sociologists, were having about the meaning of power at that time.
Hmm.
Most people who are interested in power are interested in some idea of who controls the way things are.
Yeah.
Who has the capacity to shape the way things are. And you know, political scientists interested in power are primarily interested in the ways that public policy and the exercise of state power are determined, or the ways that they are shaped, who is shaping them, or how they're being shaped.
What does the term liberal mean today?
Liberalism is certainly a deeply contested concept.
Mm-hmm.
It derives from the idea, the French idea of libre or liber in Latin, the idea of freedom or to be liberated. And liberalism historically has been associated with a liberation from The privileges of the old order of feudalism, religious establishment. But today, I think in American public discourse, it has often become used as a kind of epithet or term of abuse.
And what's fascinating is that even people on the left today are using it as an epithet.
That is fascinating. It's also true, I think, that there have been forces on the left that have always been anti-liberal. In some ways, it could even be said that Marx and Engels were anti-liberal. So I think that it's not so surprising to me that certain individuals or groups that identify as being on the left are anti-liberal. It's also the case that on the right, being anti-liberal has become almost like de rigueur. It's essential to disparage liberalism. The more interesting thing is that is how many liberals. I mean, people who are not really on the far left and they're not on the right, but they're reluctant to use the term liberal or liberalism, and how widely the term neoliberalism has also become a term of abuse. Neoliberalism, I think, does not mean quite the same thing as liberalism does, but both of these terms are terms that I think are under a wide, let's say, shadow of suspicion. For much of my political life and my academic career, I thought of myself as not a liberal, never an anti-liberal, but not a liberal. I thought of myself as a Democrat with a small D, or a radical Democrat, or a democratic socialist. There are different terms that, but I was resistant to the term liberalism. That started changing actually after 9/11, and for me now, I actually embrace the term liberal. So I'm happy to embrace the idea of liberalism because it is really under siege now.
There was once a young guy, Jeff Isaac, in New York City.
There was. That's true.
Standing on the street corner with his buddies, talking about this and that.
Yeah.
Maybe politics.
Sometimes, maybe, but not so much. It was really only when I entered Queens College in the mid-1970s that I really became interested in politics. That Jeff Isaac that was on the street corner, like, or hanging out, was mainly playing stickball or playing basketball, you know.
I'm smelling, seeing, hearing New York.
Totally. Yeah, Queens. And, you know, that guy never thought he would be an academic. And if we went back to that guy, it would be absurd. He would be laughing at the thought.
You tickle those keys occasionally. You are a jazz keyboardist.
I am.
The postmodern jazz quartet.
For me, this has been my thing musically. We play basically a kind of post-bop jazz.
Was the stickball kid playing piano?
Oh, absolutely. But the stickball kid, first of all, the stickball kid took classical piano lessons and learned a ton, but hated to practice. And the stickball kid, for the first 2 years that he took piano lessons, I guess starting when he was eight, he didn't have a piano, so a neighbor, a terrific woman named Bella Goldman, she used to let me come into her house and practice the piano. And what I would do is go in there and basically sit around there and not practice the piano and then come home and tell my mother that I practiced the piano.
Jeff Isaac, he's a professor at the Indiana University Department of Political Science. Jeff Isaac, thanks for being on Big Talk.
We're done now. Thanks for having me, Big Mike.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature.
Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, what do you like best about Bloomington? Now that the students have left and only long-time residents remain, one wonders what it is that Bloomington's permanent residents like best about their town. Voices has gone out into the streets and asked the question, what do you like best about Bloomington?
I think all the different festivals and things like Lotus Festival and Farmers Market and all the different cultural activities.
I like personally is its proximity to nature and the parks that are in town and the forests and whatnot that are outside of town. That's what I like a lot about it.
I grew up in a pretty small area of Tennessee. It's very, I don't know, Republican, I guess you could say. So this is just kind of a nice liberal haven. I like that factor.
Yeah. I like so many things about Bloomington. I like that you can just walk out and have any given day and there's so much happening. It's a great music scene, just really alive, vibrant town.
Well, what I like most is that it's surrounded by hills that are great for bicycling. And I love the fact that this area was not glaciated, so it's really hilly.
It's a really like diverse place. Like there's like different things to do. Like you can go like eat a cuisine that you never have before one day and then go do something like hike the woods. Like there's just a bunch of different things to do. It's like not normal, like it's not the same as like any other normal city.
I think that Bloomington is a really open-minded place. We have a lot of restaurants. We are, I guess, open-minded. We're the haven in Indiana. We don't really judge people as much as other places, or at least I like to think so.
And I'm walking, as I travel all over, and I'm like, this is such a cute town. And I get to walk to cool places.
I really enjoy it. I enjoy the size, the closeness to the university, the activities you can do because of that. And I like the liberalness of the community. I'm a liberal myself, and I really like the fact that it's a democratic community.
People seem to care about the way things look, as far as the city and the neighborhoods. I think I like that. It's a college town, probably like that. Those would probably be the two biggest things.
I'm an interior designer, have my own business, and I get to work on a lot of sororities. And I like working with the young collegians and the chapter members, so that's probably my most favorite thing.
My favorite part about living in Bloomington, I'd definitely say, has to deal with kind of like the composite whole of like running around to the town and being able to connect with the different people who live here. Sometimes you don't want to like see or like run into certain folks, but like being at very public spaces like the coffee shops or like the restaurants, the front porches, and being able to see kind of the same familiar faces or meet new faces at those same places, that's kind of what makes this place feel very homey to me, you know?
I think it's the culture. Bloomington is a very weird place and it's very accepting of weird things. And I think that that's what makes it really unique, especially because it turns it into this little oasis inside of Indiana, because most of Indiana is not recognized as being very accepting and open and welcoming.
Corner isn't very accepting.
Bloomington is. It's one of the only places, I feel, that you walk around and there's googly eyes on almost everything.
I think it's a small city, but offers all the diversity of a larger city. I think it has things to offer for everybody, really. Regardless of age or interest, everything's here. You've got the arts, you've got a lot of sports, and great restaurants, and good Midwestern people.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is William Hosea.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.